Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. Today I'll be speaking with Robert Lelure, whose new book is The Living End, a memoir of forgetting and forgiving. And we'll hear from Allison Pellegrin, whose new collection of poetry is Hurricane Party. Robert Lelure is one of those unforgettable writers whose voice leaps off the page, and once you've fallen under its spell, you'll want to listen to it over and over again. Readers first discovered him in his fabulous memoir published in 2008 called The Memoirs of a Beautiful Boy. Now he's back with a second memoir, The Living End, a memoir of forgetting and forgiving. We're all happy to hear more about the amazing women in his family. Robert, I'm so happy to see you again.
I am thrilled to be here.
Well, welcome to The Reading Life. Mm-hmm. Now, The Living End is a story of strong women mm-hmm. who face extraordinary challenges in life, isn't it?
It is. And the beautiful, strong women who brought me up.
So tell us about them.
Well, you know, they all had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder about being slightly unacknowledged. And I think that one of the great blessings of writing and of being a writer is being able to take a big spotlight and turn it on amazing people. Mm-hmm. It's one of the great pleasures, I think.
Now, one of the twists in your book is that your grandmother, Joanne Peacock Wilson,
that's right.
What a wonderful name,
thank you.
Was such an important presence in your life. And she and her daughter, your mother, were estranged for so many years.
Oh, I mean, basically forever. I mean, my mother sort of came out pissed off, you know? So.
And stayed that way.
Yes, yes.
But tell about the strange and wonderful reconciliation.
Well, you know, when my grandmother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it broke my heart because I truly did not know how I would proceed through life without the benefit of her wit and her intelligence. And it seemed like a sort of unrelieved tragedy. When she and my mother had sort of never gotten on, and when my grandmother got Alzheimer's, she forgot that. Mm-hmm. And they were able to meet each other for the first time again. And as sad as it was in so many ways, it was also one of the great, beautiful things I've ever had the opportunity to witness or to be a part of. I've been talking a lot lately about the phrase blessing in disguise, which is a sentiment I love. I'm not crazy about that phrase because I feel like when you're walking through hell, it's not helpful for someone to say, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm. And I think that something can be absolutely terrible and also in an entirely different column bring something very, very beautiful and an experience of joy with it and of grace. And that was the experience of my grandmother's Alzheimer's. When my mother and grandmother met again, they loved each other. Mm-hmm. And it's totally changed the way that I think about memories. I mean, I write memoirs, for goodness sakes.
Right.
You know? And I think that we all walk through life believing that we are what we remember mm-hmm. in a certain sense. And I think that there's a way in which that's completely false. Because I think that sometimes one's memories can prevent one from being who she really is.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you were living through this great struggle with your husband's mother.
That's right. Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
There was a whole sort of like season of fading, and it changed. Though, I mean, my mother-in-law, who's from Louisiana, from Gaetan, Louisiana, who is the sort of tenderest person I've ever known, really began to have an experience of suffering. And she had a stroke. She lost her husband. It was a very difficult season for her. And she was suffering, and there was nothing I could do about that. There's nothing any of us could do about it. And it really changed my perspective about my grandmother's Alzheimer's because my grandmother was totally happy and mm-hmm. fine and safe and well. And I thought, oh, wow, real tragedy involves witnessing someone you love suffer and not being able to alleviate mm-hmm. that suffering.
And yet,
yes.
even that story turned a bit, which is lovely.
It did. It was, I mean, she came into her own in the sort of 11th hour. Mm-hmm. It was really beautiful to see.
Did you ever think, will this caretaking period ever end?
Yes.
I mean, that's
about
a lot
every,
of work.
Every second, because it's mm-hmm. the hardest. I think not only do people who are unwell need caretakers, but caretakers need caretakers too, you
right.
know? And it's the hardest work. And it gave me such appreciation for, because it's also work largely done by women mm-hmm. and largely unpaid. And it, boy, it gave me so much appreciation. Every time I see anyone with diapers and their grocery cart, I think, God bless you. You are doing great work.
Right. It's so hard.
It's
so hard.
The hardest thing.
Now, one of the things you said that you always admired about your grandmother, and there were so many things, such style, such spirit, but you always said you admired her fearlessness in the face of loss.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, she used to say, you know why old people are fearless? It's because we've got death breathing down our necks. We know what to be scared of. It was such an example. You know, I thought, wow, you know, what are you waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
And the story I always tell to evoke her, when I was about 4 or 5, she took me to the Houston Art Museum and she walked me up to a Van Gogh and she whispered into my impressionable little ear that I should reach out and touch the painting.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
I know. And she said this great thing. She said, they can kick us out of here, but you'll never not have touched that painting. A great, inappropriate, but great lesson.
Did they kick you out?
They did not, which is another example, which is another lesson, which is if you do something with enough courage, you might get away with it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's always a good lesson to learn. Well, this is such a short book, but it packs such a punch.
Well, I hope so. I worked on it for 4 years and it got shorter and shorter. And I thought, Robert, if you don't turn it in soon, it'll be a haiku.
Well, I'm glad you turned it in.
Me too. It wouldn't be here.
You say at the end of Memoirs of a Beautiful Boy, it often reads better, as in funnier or happier than it was lived.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's true of The Living End.
It is. You know, my great project was to celebrate my grandmother because she belonged to that generation of women who were so unnoticed, that Betty Friedan generation, who I think were prepared for lives they weren't allowed to lead. And she was so funny. And I thought, I want to write about her and celebrate her and tell the story without sacrificing her dignity. But it wouldn't be her if it weren't funny. Mm-hmm. And so I was so committed because for that generation, too, I think humor wasn't just telling a joke. It was the knotted rope that they sort of climbed to get through the Depression and Vietnam and World War II and all of the crummy stuff they had to deal with, not to mention male chauvinism. So.
That too.
Yeah.
Well, you have enormous compassion for them. It's really, it just rings through.
Mm.
And I think this will make people look at people with Alzheimer's a new way. You talk a lot about just the mere fact of appearance, you know, matters and the way people treat people.
Well, it is, I mean, the great light bulb that went on over my head years into the experience was that what was gone in her wasn't missing.
Mm-hmm.
It took a long time to get there, but I thought, wow, you know, she's right here. So the only sort of impediment to appreciating her is my own sort of grief. And if you don't get over that real quick, you're going to miss this wonderful time you get to have with her.
Oh, well, it's a wonderful description of that time. I wonder if you'd read a little bit from The Living End.
I would love to. I've always been a person to whom forgive and forget has seemed absurdly unworkable. Though I'm not so arrogant as to presume to edit scripture, since witnessing my grandmother's Alzheimer's, I've begun to wonder whether a small reversal wouldn't better suit humanity. Maybe it would be more practical if forgetting preceded forgiving. Maybe happiness would be more easily achieved if we all made a practice of forgetting. Mark Twain used to tell a story. The way I heard it, Twain claimed to have once been sick unto dying when a doctor, summoned to his deathbed, told him, Sorry, Mr. Twain, but you've got no hope. No hope, he repeated. You mean there's nothing to be done? Well, of course there's something to be done, said the doctor. You could give up drinking, smoking, and carousing all night, but you're not going to do that. So you've got no hope. Contrary to all expectations, however, Mark Twain did, in fact, give up drinking, smoking, and carousing all night, and soon made a full recovery. A few months later, though, his virtuous maiden aunt, a pillar of the church and local temperance society, fell desperately ill with the very same ailment, and promptly died. You see, said Twain, she had nothing to give up. The poor woman was like a sinking ship without cargo to cast overboard.
I love that. I love all the hope in this book.
Thank
I love
you.
That quotation from Patty Davis.
Who knew Patty Davis would be the font of all wisdom?
I know. Yeah. What is it?
Someone accused her of spreading false hope, and she said, there's no such thing as false hope. That's the point of hope.
That's the point of hope. Mm. We've been talking with the wonderful Robert Leleux about his memoir, The Living End. Don't miss it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
She turns and looks at me, and I can tell she doesn't even know who I am. I see you looking at me with a kind of need in your eyes, and I'm looking at you, but taken so by surprise, because I don't recollect our meeting. I don't even know your name. Did I know you? And if I did, why don't I remember?
Allison Pellegrin is an award-winning Louisiana poet who teaches at Southeastern Louisiana University. She's the author of several books, most notably Zydeco Tablets, Big Muddy River of Stars, and her most recent, Hurricane Party. Hi, Allison.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, so glad to have you. This is one of the most gorgeous books I've ever seen. Would you tell us a little bit about the images on the cover of Hurricane Party?
Thank you. I love the cover. And I wouldn't normally judge a book by its cover, except for this one. We had a hard time finding cover art. I wanted to stay away from hurricane imagery and to portray the more joyful aspect of the book. And I can't remember if I was the one who found it or if Amy Friels, the designer at the University of Akron Press, came across this image by a Chicago artist. Mm-hmm. And it has all of the images of mystery and sea and kind of myth. And they also look like tattoos, which I really uh-huh. like. And there's that hand shooting up over my name, which I love as well, and all of these sea monsters. And, of course, the people dancing in the corner.
The dancing couple.
it reminds me of my recital catalogs when I was a child and took dancing. You know, they put a photograph in and draw the picture of your foot tapping on the ground, you know. That's what these cover dancers remind me of. And she carried that design through the book. Mm-hmm. They appear between sections.
It's really lovely. Now, I went back to Zydeco Tablets first before I read this book, and I was struck anew by what a lovely, moving gallery of portraits that is, of, you know, fabulous individual people, like the Eunice poems. And the feeling in this book is just a little different, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think this, of all the books I've written, this one is the most personal because it comes more closely to me as an individual. It's easy to hide behind characters. It's harder for me, anyway, as a writer, to treat my own experiences directly in the poems. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely different.
Do you feel like that's what you're moving toward, ever greater revelation?
Yes, and I pity readers. Because
oh, no.
I'm just joking. I don't think that that is a bad thing. I think it's probably a sign of maturity in me and a writer that I can figure out ways to handle that in a poem. So it might be a story of mine that's personal, but hopefully I can tap on something that's universal into it and that would appeal to readers.
Mm-hmm. And like all the best Louisiana poets, your work is really firmly rooted here in landscape, in tone, in language, all kinds of things.
I'm belligerent about that. I grew up on the West Bank in Gretna, and I didn't want to hide that. I wanted to be proud. And my first writing teacher was Tim Gautreau. Uh-huh. And when I kind of got the permission from him 20 years ago, saying, oh, yeah, you can do that. You can write poems about that. I just took off. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'll never run out of material. So yes, it is definitely rooted in the landscape and the voices, too, of the people of this region.
And once you've read your poems, you'll always think of the West Bank as the land of the Gretna Royals, which I love. I love that so much.
Thank you.
I'm curious to know how you know when a collection of poems is finished.
I don't know. If someone ever figures that out, I hope they will call me and tell me. I thought I was finished writing, saying everything I had to say in Big Muddy River of Stars, and stuff kept kind of creeping in, Katrina stuff. And so that came here. And I even have poems in the book where I'm swearing it off, saying this is the last one, this is the last one, right. And it just wasn't. For me, it's always something that I have to learn with each collection when I'm arranging it, that crazy mm-hmm. time when the poems are spread out across the dining room floor and I'm looking for an order. I don't want it to be too linear. I'm just looking for what feels right, trying to arrange it every which way. This poem that closes the book, Tabasco in Space, was one of the first poems that I wrote, and who knows how it ended up last. So for me, it's a real challenge to organize a book of poems. I know some people have an easier time of it than I do.
Because I always think that's so interesting, because every collection of poems has a rhythm. Mm-hmm. You know, as you read through. So there's that great long poem and then each individual
yes,
piece.
Yes, and it's hard. You do want to, I mean, I want to capture a certain voice and mood at the beginning and have ups and downs and then close it, really nail it shut, you know. So, of course, I have that in mind, but I'm also aware of the way I read a book of poems first, and that mm-hmm. is just letting it flip open and speak to me that way.
Now, you've come full circle, and you're paying forward all that kind of good energy that Tim Gautreau gave to you in the classroom. What do you think is the most important piece of advice you give your students?
To read poems all of the time. To read poems that may not be your favorite types of poems. And I think that hearing poetry read out loud by yourself or by someone else is the best way to get a sense of what's happening in a line.
Mm-hmm. Usually when I read a book of poems, I walk around my house and read it out loud. Mm-hmm. So I really feel it. But it's deeply satisfying, you know? It really is.
It is. And that is what I love about poetry is the music. I mean, I feel like a rock star, you know, reading that stuff out loud with real gusto and feeling. So read as much poetry as you can. And now it's so easy because there's so much high quality work that's published online.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting together a list of resources for my poetry students. I was actually doing that today, and I was directing them to the online journal Blackbird, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful source. And, of course, the Poetry Foundation's website has an archive
great,
of all of the works there. And the Valparaiso Poetry Review as well. That's just a few. So it's mm-hmm. so easy to find great work online.
Well, be a rock star now and read one of the poems from the Hurricane Party, would you?
I will. I'm going to read Where Yet. Now I will sing the Louisiana drawl, for to me it is a joyful noise, more better than the blues or funk or Dixieland jazz. For this is the language of kings, like my grandfather royal, and it holds more music than newscasters speak. For my mama and them, when they angry, they drawl it best. To find out, just laugh when they say shrimps. For I was brought up right, and I know things, like you're supposed to feed me before starting in with questions. For I can stump the Sphinx who riddles, who's your mama, are you Catholic, and can you make a roux? For I will tell, but first I want a Creole tomato from Plaquemines Parish. For in taste they are divine, being sometimes grown in the shade of pecan trees. For true, at the lunch counter, I love a long wait just to be near the unspellable speak of the cooks. For you would have to hear it to believe. For God has sent this waitress to the table to shower me with, have a blessed day. For all the children at Mandina's feel it when our hands halo above their heads, but never a light. For when the city sleeps, I have caught myself listening in on FEMA trailers. For, like I said, when they're angry, they drawl it best. For some can rock the trailer with their curses. For sometimes I will scoot through a crowd and touch everyone I pass. A secret dance I come up with the night Tuba Fats, sign of the cross, may he rest in peace, saw me from the stage. For he must have meant me when he hollered, "Can I get an amen, sister?" For everyone looked my way and I told him, "Yeah, you right." My voice, one voice in the gospel choir.
Oh, thank you, Allison. That's my favorite poem in this book. I love it. Oh, we've been talking with poet Allison Pellegrin about her new book, Hurricane Party. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure being here.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Jocelyn Jackson signs A Grown-Up Kind of Pretty, Wednesday, February 1st at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Nevada Barr signs The Rope, Saturday, February 4th at 1 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop. Cornell Landry signs Happy Mardi Gras, Saturday, February 4th at 2 p.m. at Octavia Books. Constance Adler signs My Bayou, New Orleans Through the Eyes of a Lover, Thursday, February 9th at 5:30 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop. And here's a shout out to John Corey Whaley, a native of Spring Hill, Louisiana, a Louisiana Tech alum, and a former teacher at Urey Middle School in Shreveport. John was just awarded the Michael L. Prince Award for Excellence in Young Adult Literature and the William C. Morris Young Adult Debut Author Award for his novel, Where Things Come Back. Major support for The Reading Life is provided by Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and from the estate of Dr. Judith Bradow. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.